going to do the same thing Rick did and just put this down for a minute. My name is Biddy, and I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is a little bit weird. It's B-I-T-T-Y. It's just a nickname. My real name is Elizabeth, but if I'm not in handcuffs, I don't answer to it. Life is just weird. How in the world am I here doing this, talking to you? Earlier, someone asked if there were newcomers, and my back was to you. I saw a few. Specifically, where is June? Oh, never mind then. Okay. When she gets back, will you? And then the other newcomers, where are you? Right, raise of hand. All right. Thank you. I'm really glad you're here today. My name, again, is Biddy. I am a recovered alcoholic, and it's an amazing thing that Alcoholics Anonymous can do to a hopeless, helpless, hapless woman alcoholic. Says on the front of my book here, says our chief responsibility to the newcomer is an adequate presentation of the program. And so I hope to be adequate today. I have a home group called AA on the Rocks in Caldwell, Idaho. It's Area 18 and District 4. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. They told me to stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and at first I kind of thought that meant like go to a lot of meetings and all of that, and that's great. But I think what it really means is that we stay in the middle of the work. And I have a story of relapse, actually, that I'm not proud of, but very, very grateful to have, because it's such a good indicator of how not to do it as much as how to do it. And so I'm going to start, because I don't want to miss out on this. On the way here, I drove through some treacherous weather and some beautiful weather. In fact, I think I drove through five of the four seasons that God gave us. In between Caldwell and Spokane, and I did that all in probably about 8 hours yesterday. While I do that, I listen to this little book. If you're new and you do not have a copy of this book called Language of the Heart, which is a compilation of all of Bill Wilson's grapevine writings, please get it. Please get it, along with a copy of AA Comes of Age, and, of course, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I listened to it on audio, and there was a beautiful letter in here, which I'm going to go ahead and read. It only takes 3 minutes, at least on the time that I did it in the car. But it's on page 101, and it says, it's a letter to the mother of an alcoholic. And it says, Dear Mother of Jay, I cannot tell you how poignantly I am stirred by your letter that you wrote to the grapevine about your alcoholic son. This is, again, Bill Wilson, our co-founder. Just 10 years ago, my own mother, after years of frantic bewilderment and lost hope, long a chronic problem drinker, I had come to the jumping-off place. A very good doctor had pronounced the grim sentence. Obsessive drinker, deteriorating rapidly and hopeless. The doctor used to talk about my case somewhat like this. Yes, Bill has underlying personality defects, great emotional sensitivity, childishness, and inferiority. This very real feeling of inferiority is magnified by his childish sensitivity, and in this state of affairs, which generates him in him that insatiable, abnormal craving for self-approval and success in the eyes of the world. Still a child, he cries for the moon, and the moon, it seems, will not have him. Discovering alcohol, he found much more in it than do normal folks. To him, alcohol was no mere relaxation. It means release. Release from inner conflict. It seems to set his troubled spirit free. The doctor then would go on Seen in this way, normal people can picture how a compulsive habit can become a real obsession, as indeed it has in Bill's case. Once he arrives at the obsession point, alcohol overshadows all else. Hence, he now appears to be utterly selfish and immoral. He will lie and cheat and steal or what have you to serve his drinking ends. Of course, those about him are shocked and dismayed because they think his actions are willful. But that is far from being so. The real picture of Bill is that of a bankrupt idealist, one who has gone broke on vain, childish dreams of perfection and power, victimized now by this obsession. He is a little boy crying alone in the dark in a strange room, waiting, agonized for mother or God to come and light a candle. I must confess, Mother of Jay, that I have put some of these words into the doctor's mouth, but that's the alcoholic's life as I have lived it. Did I, an alcoholic, have a defective character? Of course I did. Was I, an alcoholic, also a sick man? Yes, very. To what extent I am personally responsible for my drinking, I don't know, yet I am not one to take complete refuge in the idea that I was a sick man only. In earlier years, I certainly had some degree of free will. That free will I used badly, to the great misery of my mother and countless others. I am deeply ashamed. As one who knows me a little, you may have heard now that 10 years ago, a friend, himself a liberated alcoholic, came to me bearing, squiggly writing, the light, which finally led me out of those toils. And there will come a day that for you and yours. There will come that day for you and yours. He says, I am so confident. That is my first step. I qualify. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and all of the things that Bill says in 3 minutes, it would take me all day to tell you, so I'll just hit a couple of highlights. My mom was alcoholic. My dad, the jury's out. He hadn't had a drink for very many years, but he exhibited all the heavy drinkers. But by the time I was 13, my mother finally succumbed to alcoholism. She weighed 92 pounds. She was 5'10". And so my entire life grew up looking at the only mother figure that I had die, decompose. She decomposed. She truly was just flesh and bone and distended abdomen. And it says in our literature, you know, they stopped in time, right? And it says that some of the younger people are spared the last 10 or 15 years of literal hell that some of us have gone through. And so I think that's kind of the category I fall in, but it was because I watched this other process, and my entire first 13 years of my life were the last 10 or 15 years of her literal hell. And she died in the downstairs bedroom of the house I grew up in, and the last thing that she had consumed was bourbon in a coffee cup, because that really was all she really wanted. And so that's what alcoholism does. It isn't a fancy thing. It may have started out kind of fancy. So seeing that, you know, because you see things. Oh, we're both doing that? Are we? Signers need a raise. Seeing that didn't prevent me from becoming an alcoholic, and I thought it would, you know, because I grew up in that. It's like, that will never be me. I'm not going to, yeah, no, 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 no. And I don't understand people that said they started drinking really, really young. I drank the first time, like, at 13, but it was I didn't have any effect at all. The next time, though, I was 16 years old, and I drank Everclear. And I guess Everclear is kind of potent. That would be like modern day moonshine and really, really, really strong. And I don't remember much of what happened at all, actually. I remember waking up the next day. The very last thing I remember was going in the my boyfriend's Bronco to, we were going to go see a movie, and we were going to drink some of this Everclear first. And I don't have any real experience with alcohol, except for, of course, if you want to count that whole watching my mother die of it, if you don't look at that. So I drank that, and I remember chasing it with Squirt, and then drink out of the bottle, and then chase it with Squirt, and the next thing I know, I woke up the next day. And I was covered in vomit and sticks and weeds, and I had no recollection of how I got there, and so the only thing you can really do is find out, right? So I got an earful, and so the things that happened to me that day was something that was going to end up being a pattern in my life that, I, of course, if it only happens once, it's not a pattern yet. It became a pattern later. I do these three things, vicious, violent, and vulgar, or my friend Deborah gave me those three words to use. Mine were not as clean as those. She gave me vicious, violent, and vulgar, and that is what happened. I apparently became extremely combative. I did the Jekyll Hyde. I was laughing 1 minute, and the next minute, I am violent. I'm wanting to swing. I'm wanting to run. I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one that wakes up naked places. I've woken, you know, that's just seems to be the thing. And, you know, if it weren't so dangerous, it's funny because, you know, newcomers, we are fun. Okay. But so the idea behind that wasn't that I shouldn't drink alcohol. It was that I shouldn't drink Everclear, because that's basically what they said around me. And I was not one of those people. I don't know how many alcoholics. I did not enjoy being drunk. Being drunk was not a sensation I enjoyed. One of the reasons I read to you that little story of the letter is by what it says alcoholism gave me that I didn't know I was looking for. It set me free. Release. Freedom from inner conflict. And it seemed to set his troubled soul free. Alcohol gave me quietness of soul that I never knew I was missing until I found it in the working of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was such a familiar, it was almost, what do we call that, the deja vu moment. In sobriety, I'm having that quietness of soul, but now I'm having it without intoxication, and I'm like, that's it. You know, and the phrase comes to mind as even a blind pig gets an acorn once in a while, and I got it. And I got it, not because I understood the work, it was because I did the work. I was desperate enough. And so when I have that isolated incident, right? It was an isolated incident at 16 years old. I said, I will never do that again. And what I meant was I will never have that behavior again, because that is behavior that I was raised better than that. I was not raised that way to be combative and violent. I mean, I was not anyhow. I didn't understand that the two were linked. And so I thought when I first was coming around Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll tell you that this is my first book that I ever have. If I lose it, I'll get another one. But if the first date in this book is July 30th, 1989, and doggone, you know, I just wasn't ready. I didn't see that yet. I didn't see alcoholism yet. I still thought I drank for reasons. And so one of the things that Alcoholics Anonymous does, at least in this book, you know, this book uses we a lot, and we in AA, right, are more than just we, the fellowship. The we that wrote the book are people that have already had this experience. In that place in the doctor's opinion where it talks about the physical allergy, I knew about the physical allergy, but I thought that was the only thing that alcoholism was. When I drink, I become vicious, violent, vulgar, and I have no idea where I'm going to end up, who I'm going to be with, or what's going to happen. So I better not drink, and as long as I don't drink, I'm fine. I did not understand the second component. The idea that I'm in the grip of something, and even though I had 9 years of exposure to AA literature, I did not have the experience yet to be able to see that the obsession I had for destructive drinking was invisible. And if you'll catch that little thing in there, I cannot see something that is invisible. I had to experience it enough times to recognize that I have no control once I drink, but I also have no choice as to whether or not I'm going to drink again. And that's where the problem lies. And so I will make constant references to the literature because, you know, in the foreword to the fourth edition, which I actually tore out of a fourth edition and pasted into my third edition because I carry my third edition. I still study the other one, but I carry this one because it has the gold in it. This is like Jumanji. This book is alive. Sometimes the words will pop off and they move. It sounds creepy and weird. It sounds kind of otherworldish, right? But it's true. On page 23, I'm going to go with page 23. At the top paragraph, it says, all these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink. So anything up to page 23, if you're new, do not hear me say don't study that. But anything that describes alcoholism up to page 23 is the part I can see. Page 23 starts into the part I can't see. So that's what I'm going to read. It says, these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. And I had done that repeatedly now. If you ask him why he started, he might have 100 alibis. Sometimes the excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of it really makes sense. Okay, but I could tell myself lies and rationalize. Well, would you ever drink at somebody? I would drink at my husband a lot. And then here it is. This paragraph on page 23 is the one that maybe really went, oh. It says, once in a while they may tell the truth, and the truth, strange to say, is they usually doesn't have any more idea why he took the first drink than you have. Some drinkers have excuses with which they are satisfied part of the time. But here's my highlight. But in their hearts, they really don't know why they do it. Once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. So as long as I still had an answer for you as to why I drank, I was going to keep drinking. It wasn't until I became baffled by it myself. Like, I don't know. My husband would ask me time and time again, why do you do this? And I'd have an answer. And then I stopped having answers. And finally it was, I don't know. I just crumbled and said, I don't know. So I became teachable and started my journey with this lady named Betty. There's a whole bunch that goes into that story. Because, again, 9 years of exposure to AA literature, and I finally had that first step experience where I drank my way through my job because I measured my success by earthly gain. Really great song. I think it's called I Surrender All, and it talks about if I measure my success by a scale of earthly gain, my accomplishments are worthless and my efforts are in vain. And so I would stand sometimes. I had a beautiful home. I grew up horseback. I grew up at the southern entrance of Yosemite National Park in the Sierra Nevada mountain range. I could saddle the horse at my tie rack and ride till I die. And I tried a few times. If anybody's ever had animals and drank your way through there, I hope your animals are on your amends list. It's serious. I mean, there was a lot going on, but I grew up in a beautiful place, and I'd stand up in I had a three-story house, and I'd stand on the third story and look out the bathroom window. I'd get up in the morning, and I'd be just miserable. I felt as if there were two of me, the one, you know, that portrays themselves to the outside world, and I'm reading this AA literature says an alcoholic, like, more than most people, leads a double life. I had the life that you know, because I looked good. I showed up to AA with six-pack abs and a thong tan line. I got the world by the tail. Drive a nice big truck, seven horses in the barn. My husband is the Marlboro man. And my life is running between my fingers like sand. There's nothing that I can get a grip on. I can't get a grip on anything. You know that joke about get a handle? God, man, I'm just about to get a handle on it. You know, and if I were a dog, I'd be a border collie or an Australian shepherd, one of the two. And those dogs never stop. Sometimes they die trying. We call that heart. I call it stupid. But that's what we do. And so I'd stand and survey my kingdom outside my bathroom window, and I'd look out the back there, and I'd look at all that, and I just would stand there sometimes and cry, because I knew there was a beautiful day to be had, and I couldn't show up for it. By the time I finished my drinking, I remember waking up in the bed, and I have a vague memory of my sister-in-law standing next to my bed. I, to this day, don't know how she got in the house, but I had a bottle of vodka on the floor next to me, and I didn't drink pretty. I was not a social drinker. I didn't like being drunk, but I liked the quietness it gave me, and once it had a hold of me, that was it, and I had a bottle of vodka on the floor next to me. I had soiled myself because I couldn't get out of bed. And I remember that she was standing there, and she was saying, "Are you okay?" And I told her, "Yes, I'm fine. I'll be fine. I'm okay." She said, "Okay." So that was the kind of the tail end of it. I'd lost my job, and I called the, it wasn't a hotline, although I know the lady was on the hotline, and my husband didn't know what to do with me. I became drunk and combative and suicidal that day, and I made a couple of phone calls, and they didn't know, a lady named Maura used to go to the fellowship where I was there. It's Oakhurst Fellowship, by the way. Oakhurst Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're ever driving to Yosemite through the southern entrance, stop there and go to a meeting because it's still there. And Maura's sponsor, Betty, was the one I somehow got in touch with. I was drunk, don't ask me, okay? I'm the last person to ask, but from my memory of that, I was either given Betty's number or she was given mine, but I know that my husband was finished fighting with me. The thing about the husband that I had then, it's a different one now, was that he was much larger than me, and I always thought that if I, no matter how hard I fight, I can't hurt him. And I meant that physically, because he could always subdue me, and so it always, he was always my governor. He would control and enjoy my drinking, and that was never a healthy relationship to begin with. He needed me and I needed him, and neither one of us had anything going on that wasn't about, you know, controlling the other one. But he called Joe called Maura, Maura called Betty, and I end up on the phone with this lady named Betty. And Betty had gotten sober in the Pacific Group and was sponsored at one point by Clancy. The name of the old-timey people kind of come up a lot. We should not put people on pedestals. Clancy's kind of there. A few others are. I have some beautiful, beautiful tapes of a guy named Sandy B. and Bob B. If you ever get to listen to old-timey AA, please listen to Bob B. I'm on the phone with Betty. She is having none of it, from what I can recall. She stayed on the phone with me, I think, for about an hour while I am hysterical and screaming, and I want out. I just want out. And she says, "Well, you know, one of the names of the big book, of the names they were going to call it, it's going to be the James Club, because the three books of the Bible that the AA book is written from is 1 Corinthians 13, the book of James, and Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. So one of the names of the book was going to be the James Club. One of them was going to be called A Way Out. It was going to, and that's what I'm wanting. I'm wanting a way out. I don't know of what, I think of this, my spirit was bound. My spirit was bound. And that's what I want free from. And I realized later that it was the bondage of self. But she said one of the books, one of the names was going to be called A Way Out. And I took pause with that. Like, what? I thought this was about not drinking. And do you know that in this book, at least I don't think in the first 164 pages of the big book, it never says don't drink. In fact, it says the opposite. It says go do it. Try to pray and stop abruptly. That was brilliant, right? Try to drink and stop abruptly. It won't take long for you to decide if you're honest with yourself about it. And so I remember talking to Betty, and I had already memorized, because I don't like to look stupid, some of the, you know, the pride, we just read it in that letter, you know, this thing about an alcoholic with this inferiority and superiority and whatever it is, whether it's big or little, it's going to be about me in some capacity, because that's how I roll. When I first came to AA, I could see that they were calling on people. There were books everywhere on our tables. We didn't read from any laminate. In fact, I didn't know about a laminate. Until I moved, I thought, laminate, what's this? What is this? And to this day, I won't read from a laminate. If I have my book and you have a laminate, I'm going to bring my book and hand you back your laminate. I know sometimes for simplicity, today, for instance, it's good, but I'll always bring my book. And I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, I hate when that happens. I hate when that happens. Where was I? Betty, thank you very much. Betty says the name of the book, and so I asked Betty to sponsor me. And one of the things that I had noticed, okay, that's what it was. One of the things that I'd noticed in my first 9 years of exposure, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1989. Went to meetings, I'd go for a little while, but I never came all the way in, never sat all the way down. But you were going to ask me to read. And so I find out right away what you're going to ask me to read, and I'm going to go home and read it. I took one of their books, because in their books at our fellowship, all of the readings, chapter 5, more about alcoholism, how it works, chapter 3, more about alcoholism, a couple of excerpts in the back, the keys of the kingdom, unfortunately, the ninth step promises. I say unfortunately because I'm afraid we're leading people to believe that those are the only promises. They are not. If you're new, they are not. Please call them the ninth step promises. They're beautiful, but that's all they are. I work for the 10th, 11th, and 12th. So I highlighted that, and I went home and I memorized it. I would read it aloud to myself and memorize it so that in case you call them, well, this is a beautiful way to trick yourself with your own pride right into memorizing AA literature. And so I had that last experience during my drunk where I could see the progression. I could, all of a sudden, I could see myself. I could see my mom. And it's like, whoa, I don't have any choice. It's not about when I'm drinking. It's about when I'm not. And I got scared. And it was one of the first times where, and I heard a newcomer articulate it better than I ever could. And the newcomer, I heard her say on an online meeting, and she said, the minute I really realized what alcoholism is, I stopped being ashamed and got really scared. Like I was afraid. All of a sudden, the denizens in our literature, I think it's at page 151, it says we're shivering denizens of the mad realm, right? Well, I began to recognize, and I had this conversation earlier with Mars, that the word denizen isn't, it's not the brand of chili. The word denizen means an inhabitant. And so if you read that sentence, it says we're a shivering inhabitant of the mad realm. And I knew that I was in the grip of something way bigger than me. And I knew it. Now I know. Oh, my God. I can't get out of this on my own. Bill Wilson's first up experience becomes mine. Quicksand is around me in all directions, and I don't know where to turn. And I'm at a turning point, and that was the one right there. I'm at a turning point. We stood at a turning point. What are you going to be? You know, and I'm like an old rocker. I've got Bat Out of Hell in my head from Meatloaf, and it's like, you know, what's it going to be, boy? Yes or no? You know. And it was yes. I'm on the phone with Betty. I'm drunk. which I asked her to sponsor me. I never would have made that decision sober, you guys, because Betty was, in my humble opinion, not a very nice woman. Okay? She was not a very nice woman. Betty saved my life. What I interpreted as not a very nice woman was a woman that was willing to have me dislike her for the sake of my soul and my sobriety. And she was willing to spend, when I look back, and Betty is deceased now, and I miss her so much because I have questions. I want to know how she did what she did because I would love to be able to do that. How did you do that? How did you know what to say and when to say it? How did you know when to push and when to not? How did you know all those things? And then today I sponsor younger women. And I'm like, that's how she knows, because God puts it there. And I have an experience to share with you. This is what happened when I did what you're doing right now. This is what happened when I did that. But you go ahead. Maybe it'll work out different. And if it doesn't, know that I have the experience of I know the way out. It's not about making mistakes. My home group, John, one guy back in my home group, he's told me it's not about making mistakes. It's not mistakes that get you drunk. It's justification of them. It's my justifying of the mistake, my rationalize. I tell myself rationalize. My friend Garen says he has half his head selling nonsense. It's not the word he used. Half his head selling nonsense and the other half is buying it. And so it becomes a matter of supply and demand. So if there's nobody buying it, the seller dies of neglect. And he also told me, home group John said, if you get into service to others, some of your character defects will also die of neglect. But Betty, you know, Betty was the first one. And, you know, I've spent this whole time trying to get maybe that, you know, I always chase the first kiss. I mean, doesn't everybody chase the first kiss? And Betty, those moments of transformation with Betty, and it was always in the work. And I remember her saying that moment where she said, well, you know, that's what the book is about. And it's on page 17. And it says we have a way out. And I didn't know, okay, this is another thing that John said too. I didn't know that I was looking for a way out, because until I recognized that I was jailed, I didn't know that I needed out of jail. And so it has become this thing where until you know you're in jail, why would you try to get out? That's the first part of getting out of jail, is knowing you're in it to begin with. And I was listening. There was people of differing ideas about what AA is. And I was handed a cassette tape. The cassette tape, by the way, makes a specific noise if it's in its little case, its plastic case, and it hits the palm of your hand, and the whole thing makes a specific noise that I can't duplicate right now, but it went like this. And he says, here, you need this. My home group, John, hands me a tape. The tape was Scott R., which is irrelevant for the story, except for it was the gateway drug, if you will, into listening to speakers. Because I was confused about the message that's in the book, the message that's in the literature, and the message that's in the room. They weren't the same thing. I've got my sponsor, this gal Betty, telling me a whole different thing than what I'm hearing in a lot of the meetings that I was going to. And it frightened me. It frightened me because I'm looking for someone to follow, anyone to follow, because I know I'm a goner. That's the fact of step one. The promise, if you will, of step one is I'm a goner. And so I began to get involved in the literature kind of right away as a matter of desperation. And now it's just a matter of reverence. I'm in love with the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. The foreword to the fourth edition says that the literature preserves the integrity of the AA message. Why would we not read it? Well, because I'm selfish and self-centered. You know, that's why. I mean, if you want to know, I mean, that's what comes up. I don't know what comes up in your inventory, but I got selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. The four things that we're designed to look for. Everything else is a manifestation. And for me, it all boils down to fear inventory. And the end result is it boils down to fear, which resentment, selfishness, and dishonesty all crop up from that. So when I can solve the fear problem, the rest of them are dramatically minimized, not eradicated. I'd never knew about the word mitigate, I guess. Mitigation is a word that got used a whole lot through the pandemic. And I thought, what the hell does that word even mean? I'm a grown-up. But anyway, I got a dictionary. Oh, it means just to lessen. So we're just going to decrease it. So I thought that once you have a spiritual awakening, you're just perfect now. And everything, you know, you're going to have like the Cinderella moment. The bluebirds will be singing and the rainbows will are out. And, it's not that way. So I think mitigation rather than eradication. On step 10 in the middle of page 84, it says, we continue to watch for, continue to take personal inventory. And continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And it says when these crop up. It does not say if. And so during the course of the day, I watch for those things. And I either make a mental note or a written note. You know, when I was new, it was a lot more of the writing, a lot more of the calling, a lot more. But today I am not sponsor dependent. I have a sponsor. If you're new, do not hear me say, don't call. But I'm God reliant today. And I have a sponsor because I don't always see things clearly. So I have a sponsor whose job it is to probe. I still don't like it. I still don't like it. But I do it because, humble pie, right? Humble pie is the kale of spiritual nutrition. It's a little bitter, but it's good for me. And I don't always appreciate on the front end having to consume it, but I know in the long run I'm going to be better off. So Betty got me going in the work kind of right away. I went to her house every day. You guys, Betty collected Beanie Babies. Does anybody remember that? You know, I show up to Alcoholics Anonymous. You can tell by, what I look like today. You know, I've got like a can of chew, a pocket knife, a handgun, ball cap. You know, I'm like, how in the world is this woman going to help me? But when I sat at her table, the hutch is behind me, Beanie Babies all over, looking at that going, God, if you want what we have, I don't want this. But Betty terrified me. Betty looked at me. She looked at me, and I hated her for it. I did not understand, and this takes a while, too, because, sometimes you just like someone, and sometimes you don't. It's never them. Sometimes, because I can move away, but my dad told me something a very, very long time ago. He said, when everybody's an asshole, it's not them. And I'm like, what about you? Right? But this many years later, he's absolutely right. And so the inventory is mine, not the other guy's. And Betty said to me one time, while I'm at her table, and it was in the very tippy-tip beginning of this relationship with her, and I was looking at her, and we had our books in front of us, and she says these words. She says, I intimidate you, don't I? Stood at a turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Rigorous honesty. There are those, and I have inculcated, which is a great word that Ernie Kay uses throughout his writings. I have this repeated theme that I can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance, belligerent denial. All of it comes like your life flashes. And so rather than denying, minimizing anything, I looked right up into the boldest move I've ever made in my life to date. Was I looked right up and directly at her and said, yes, I'm intimidated by you. And it was one of those moments where you ever see the oatmeal commercials where the kid comes in and he's an ice cube, and then he takes his first bite of hot oatmeal and it just melts all the ice around it, and you, oh, it's a boy. When I looked at her and said, yes, I'm intimidated by you, all of her ice melted, and she became somebody that I could trust. And that was the very first time in my whole life I ever felt connection with a human that I knew I could trust. And so that started this journey. I'd like to say all went well. And it did. I mean, it really, really did. It did. And for the first 5 years of my first sobriety, I was a new person. You know, my husband was grieved. I don't want to say anything disparaging because here's why. Alcoholics Anonymous not only changed my life, but it changed his. But it took a while for that to happen. And one of the things that had to happen for his life is he needed to leave me because, in fact, I was his problem. Not my alcoholism, but we were each other's solution. And as long as he stayed and tried to make me his solution, overall, I would succumb, and we both would. And so I got all the way in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a service position right away, 6 months sobriety requirement. The first one I got, this is no mistake. This can't be a mistake. After I got that speaker, and I began to listen to speakers, the next available service position in my home group was the literature representative. Oh, my gosh. The literature rack at the Oakers Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous looks like a Hallmark store. It has everything on it that they have at Central Office. Central Office was about an hour's drive away, and it was my job to, with the little clipboard, take inventory. And I'm exposed to some of the most beautiful literature you're ever going to have in your life. Plus, it gave me, along with the spiritual awakening that I had, it gave me the ability to discern, if you will. Be real careful with that thing called discern, because sometimes I think that's just a spiritual person's way of saying I can judge you now. Because I got the good glasses. Okay, but it's not, okay? I can tell what is AA and I can tell what isn't because I know what the literature says. And I know what the literature doesn't say. All right? That has proven to be of immense value over the long run. And I had to stand there. I didn't want to do it, but I had to write down the pamphlet number. I had to take inventory, count them. But in doing so, I also picked them up and read them. Right? So here's one right here. 1955, the foreword of the AA tradition and how it was our tour of the historical events that led to our unique 12 traditions and how they developed. It says, when an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of recovery to our program, to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which now holds him together in one piece overcomes the forces which had rent him apart. I was being torn. They told me I had internal conflicting ideas of myself and others. And internal conflicting. You said it, Rick. Just leave me alone. Leave me alone. Here's the kicker, though. I was alone already in the house when I'm stomping up the stairs. I'd come inside from, you know, my surveying my kingdom. You know, it takes a lot of work to manage a place, you know, and so I'm cleaning stalls and working on the road. I'm doing all this stuff, and I would come in, and I don't know who I'm talking to, but I'm stomping up the stairs at my house, and the words come out of my mouth, just leave me alone. No, wow, who was I talking to? I'm conflicted internally, and Alcoholics Anonymous is been able to remove those conflicts and open the channel to me and my Creator. And on page 55, because the topic of this, right? How much time do I have? About 10 minutes? I'm looking at the signer. She's going to tell me. Take a breath. Oh, she doesn't? Okay. This says, actually, we'd seen another kind of flight, spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems. I have never necessarily felt that I have risen above my problems. My problems, like, sunk out from under me. They just vanished. They disappeared. And it talks about it in our literature. It says, they said God had made these things possible, and we only smiled. Yeah, we'd seen spiritual relief. We'd like to tell ourselves it wasn't so. And so, actually, we're fooling ourselves, for deep down, where? Yeah, deep down, in every. There's two real important words there. In and every. Man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured. Oh, this is about it being obscured. If I remove the blockages, I'll be able to see. Have you seen the commercials for the people who are colorblind? This is a beautiful analogy. The people who are colorblind are given a new pair of glasses. And if you see all of their first responses, like they'll go, okay, here, put these on, and you'll notice there's like all the people have all the colorful things all around. Well, until the glasses like slide down in front of the field of vision, the person had never seen color before. And watch, Google it. If you Google things, GTS, Google that stuff. If you look at their reaction to the very first time they see color, that's my reaction the very first time I could see clearly. When you go into everybody's, you know, I can see clearly. And it may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, calamity. You know, I grew up in an alcoholic home. Let's just go through that, right? I had suffered from sexual abuse, psychological abuse, and mental abuse, physical abuse. All the abuses you can suffer growing up in an alcoholic household, I had suffered them. I don't want this to turn. I'm not a victim. I was. I'm not today. It says, so it's obscured by calamity, by pomp. Just look at me and all I have, right? Or am. By worship of other things. Worship of other things. What is that? The number on my bank account? Numbers were real important. The one on the bathroom scale, primary. The number of the in my bank account, the number of horses, just the stuff and the things, earthly gain, right? Well, this is by worship of other things, but in some form or another it's there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and the miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw, I mean, you could, that the whole book could just be called that. We finally saw, right? That faith in some kind of God was part of our makeup just as much as the feeling for a friend. Sometimes, for me it's every time, it remains every time. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was just as much of the fact as we were. We found the great reality. Where? When? Where? Deep within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. And so it was with us. And so that, you know, where is the kingdom of God? The kingdom of God is within, and it's always been there. And I laugh, you know, God and I've got a thing. Because I can joke with them now. You know, I said, why'd you put it there, right? Why? Come on. He said, honey, you forget your keys. I want you to know that this is not the shirt I was going to wear today. Okay? The shirt I was going to wear today is hanging in my closet because it never made it to the car. That's why God put himself here. I have a friend, Jeremiah. And Jeremiah tells me that it's written on my heart. That's where it's written. It's like, did you ever see Lord of the Rings? Right. He picks the ring up in the... And only certain people can make it come, like you can see the writing. Step four, the kingdom of God is within. And so, I want you to know that what does this have to do with not drinking? Right? What does that have to do with it? I didn't know what it had to do with it. Because if I still think that I drink because of circumstances, then I still don't understand alcoholism. that mental blank spot and the thing that I can't see, that if I don't change my entire being, right, my being needs a change, an entire psychic change. Ideas and emotions and attitudes, which were once the guiding force of my life, have been cast aside. And a new set of motivations dominates me today. A new set of motivations dominates me. Does that mean that I am perfect and don't make mistakes? No. Does that mean that I have a life free of conflict? No. But it means I know what to do when they crop up, not if. My problems are of my own making, and there's two reactions. I've only ever heard one other speaker, and I thought I made it up. I did. I thought it was mine. But I heard a speaker talk about the two reactions to life, right? There's the one that actually happens, the real one that's in there. And then there's the second one, how I react to that. So I mistook, goes back to that first thing with Betty. I thought my discomfort in her presence meant I didn't like her. But what it really meant was I didn't like the way I felt when somebody could see me. So I got a couple of things. Run and hide and do the same, leave me alone. Or take a risk and show up. Show up authentic, whether it's good or bad, okay, just show up and give these things over to a creator. I didn't like what I found, and between column 3 and column 4, we have that thing called a resentment prayer. And all of a sudden, because I listed, you know, it says you list your injuries. And, you know, my injuries were significant. They were significant. And I saw the entire world through a sheet of glass, you know, and the glass was not only, it was red glass. Everything I saw was colored with that. And the blinders came off. That's the glass that left me in between column 3 and column 4, where it says that I am to, if you're new, it's in page 67. Your sponsor can talk to you about that. I saw that they, like me, what do you mean like me? In between column 3 and column 4 in my four-step inventory, which is, if you're new, I'm no longer talking to new people, sorry. I joined the human race. And I did that before step 5. I mean, I woke up, guts come out, and I wrote, and it wasn't a matter. I used to think for the longest time that I was actually forgiving those people. I was no more forgiving them than fly to the moon. I was recognizing the kindred nature of their existence with mine. That everybody comes to the table damaged, and their symptoms, what drives them drives me. I am driven by 100 forms of fear. So are they. We were all in this alcoholic life. And I could hold the proper entity, if you will, responsible for my harm and let the rest go. Alcoholism, page 18, no other illness is like this one. With it, there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. And I get a do-over. I got out of that life. And that's what Betty said. She goes, well, it was going to be called a way out, because it truly is the path. This isn't the treasure. This is the path to the treasure. And I woke up that day in between those columns when they, like me, are suffering from spiritual illness. Ooh, I didn't want anything to do with spirituality or God or anything, but I woke up and had a God experience. Belief came later. Belief was not on the front end. Step 1, I'm a goner. Step 2, come to believe that a power greater than me could. I don't know if it doesn't yet, but it could. Maybe it could. Anything. Step 3, make, you know, a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as you understand it. I have no understanding. Good enough. Let's roll. I took my third step in my barn by myself after 9 years of exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was not formal, but it was sufficient to make my beginning. I was suicidal. I called my girlfriend on the phone. I said, what happens when God's not enough? Because I'm angry. And she says, simply, oh, Biddy. God's always enough. So I hung the phone up, and I sat on the hay, because this is where I had my, you know, the woodshed, my actual woodshed, an actual barn. I sat on the hay, laid back, and I said, then you do it. That was my third step. Then you do it. I'm okay. I'll do it. And I let the blackness, I'd been out running this blackness all my life. I let the blackness envelop me. And it was in there, and you'll read this over and over in AA literature, in the pit of despair, in the face of collapse of my human will, a new power, peace, and that's where it comes in. It doesn't come in through the high places. It comes in through the low places, if that makes any sense. And I didn't necessarily have to reach out for my Creator. It was more, I can only describe it to you because that's what I'm supposed to do. I can only describe it as a falling backwards and into it. Do you know, I have a visual of the Twin Towers and the people that were jumping. We all saw, I'm assuming we all saw that. This is not an outside issue, it's just a visual. What could have been going on inside that building that jumping out of it was a better bet? That was my third step, because I had no idea where I was going to land or what I was going to do, but I was desperate to leave the life I had been living, and I had no other alternative. There's no virtue in step three for me. There might be for you. But I started step four, and I got free and went on through the steps. There were some other things that I wanted to share. One of them, I live in step 10, 11, and 12. Step 10 is the most beautiful thing. Page 25 of this pamphlet is called A Member's Eye View. The number is P41. Order them. This is beautiful literature. And he talks about there must come a day, it seems to me, when every alcoholic, in or out of AA, finally sits down in the presence of his enemies. And when he does, he will be amazed to discover that he is attending a meeting of one, himself. The day the alcoholic in AA realizes his enemy is within, that the tigers are largely creatures of his own design and lurk in his own unconscious, that is the day when for him AA becomes what I believe is the co-founders meant it to be, a flight into reality. Remember, we're in full flight from reality. Bankrupt idealists, the only problem I ever have is thinking that something needs to be different than what it is. Idealism, Carl Jung said, idealism is like a narcotic. And it's just as bad, and it kills me just as dead. And so what does this have to do with alcoholism? Well, if I don't treat that, I am destined to drink again. Because I feel bad? No, because I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholism doesn't come in bottles, it comes in people. And if you're a real alcoholic, the kind described in our literature, the time and the day will come when you will drink again. I'm Fred. I'm in Fred's story. And he said, I get it. But if, as soon as I need you, then we saw no more of Fred for a while. So in my book, there's 3-4 years in between my coming back into AA dates. So I'm here to stay today. I relapsed because I juxtaposed my uppercase H for my lowercase H. And I did that for a period of time. My husband had left, found himself another little girl that would sit on the tailgate and watch him shoe, drink beer with him. That wasn't going to be me anymore. The silicone Barbie buckle bunny is what we referred to me as. And then my dad died. So it occurred to me on the back end of that, looking back in hindsight, as always 2020, that, did I ever really truly surrender to God? I did, you see, but I didn't have to exercise that much faith because I still had these two strong men in my life to protect me. They were gone, and I immediately put the God idea aside and went chasing after a lowercase H, and I stopped doing the things that I needed to do. I paid step 10 lip service. It, when you're wrong, promptly admitted, it kind of turned into, yes, as soon as I'm wrong, I'll let you know. It turned into that kind of thing. And step 10 is only 4 paragraphs long in our big book. Please, the directions for the steps are only located in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're nowhere else. This is the only directions we have. The 12 and 12 is beautiful. Descriptions. But this is the directions. Oh, my gosh. So there's a lot more to it. I coasted along. I ended up drinking again. I stayed out of AA for a little while because I was humiliated. I humiliated me. Nobody did that to me. And it took me a while to get back in. Not drinking, but I was too proud. And then finally one day it happened again. The same thing. Bottle of vodka by the four. I did it again. And I had to come in and eat some crow, which, as it turns out, as you know, is very good for you. Humble pie. And crow is always better when it's warm. That's another thing I say. But I think it's 276. I think I'm going to close with this line. At least I hope it is. In Language of the Heart, he says something to you. I won't take the time to find it. So may we of Alcoholics Anonymous always, oh, it talks about trusting. Oh, I'm going to blow it. Okay, so I have to abandon that thought. There is a reference to turning to the Father of Light and the giver of all perfect gifts. And so this is how Bill was closing one of the letters. And, you know, so we have this Alcoholics Anonymous to pass on to others. The only reason it's here is to pass on. The giver of all perfect gifts has placed it here for us. And so that's why I'm here. Had a little horse a long time ago. His name was Norvi, and Norvi would not walk. And my girlfriend said these words, "For the love of God, Norvi, walk." And I thought, for the love of God. For the love of God. And what an overlooked phrase. Why are you here? Why is mankind here? What are we doing here? We are here for the love of God. That's what we're for. Make me an instrument. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Seek to comfort, not to get comfort. Seek to love. Love only flows one direction. It flows out. The cup's not empty. You hear that stuff? The cup is never, it never was empty. The unsuspected inner resource can't be tapped into until the heart is open and let it out. God's love needs to come out. It's already in there. And it's artesian. It's like the more I become others focused, the less I think of me, the greater the flow. And it's like Mr. Miyagi, man, you polish over there, but you shine over here. And if I'm looking and worrying about how well I'm shining, I stop the process. Just polish. Sand the floor. Paint the fence. Fall in love like I have with you and with Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's not a creepy stalker subject-object love. It's like being in a car. We are in love together at the same time. So thank you for allowing me to be here today. It's a privilege and an honor.